This is Fresh Air. 4 years ago, James Lincoln Collier wrote a critical biography of trumpeter Louis Armstrong. It came under fire from those who said the book unfairly dismissed Armstrong's later career. Now Collier has written an even more controversial biography of Duke Ellington. Our jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has some thoughts on Collier's new book and on a recent reissue of a 1959 Ellington album. From that album, this is an excerpt from Timperturbably Blue.
James Lincoln Collier's new critical biography of Duke Ellington has just been published by Oxford, and it's both admirable and exasperating. Collier's analyses of the composer's early work are frequently brilliant. He puts himself inside Duke's head to see how the three-minute classics of the 20s and 30s were put together. And he focuses on Duke's delight in breaking the rules as a key to his genius. In the American tradition, his Ellington is a tinkerer, making subtle changes in established structures until the end result sounded nothing like its inspiration. But Collier can be a stern judge as well. He's been tactless and frank enough to point to the vulgarity in much of Ellington's later music. Still, the book's infuriating. Collier rightly maintains that Duke's best work was done before the mid-40s, but he's too quick to dismiss everything that came after. By mid-century, Ellington's penchant for grouping instruments in novel ways was so ingrained he made fascinating music even when working on blatantly commercial projects. Case in point is a 1959 session recently reissued by Columbia as Ellington Jazz Party. Notable for guest appearances by Dizzy Gillespie and blues shouter Jimmy Rushing, it's neither the best nor worst of Duke's later albums. It was, in part, a gimmick record. Its original title was Ellington Jazz Party in Stereo. For two tracks, nine percussionists were arrayed from far left to far right in front of the microphones to demonstrate the glories of stereo separation. It was a silly idea, and it sounds it. You can't fault Collier for ignoring baubles like these. And yet, even when working with the simplest materials, Ellington's knack for striking contrast saves the day. Red Carpet Part 3, a section of the so-called Toot Suite, is no more than an elementary blues built on a clarinet-dominated, brazenly simple background riff. But listen to the way that riff builds in intensity as it frames the talking trumpet of Ray Nance. The contrast between muted brass and bright clarinets is dramatic. Thank you. These days, we'd call red carpet's simple structure minimal. But then minimalism is old news in the jazz world, emerging most clearly in the work of pianists famous for playing a few notes, Count Basie, Thelonious Monk, or Duke himself. In his Ellington biography, Collier also sells short the last great soloist to join the band, tenor saxophonist Paul Gonsalves. Because he specialized in marathon, high-energy solos in which he endlessly paraphrased some basic theme, he's usually dismissed as a one-trick pony, a cheap showman. But one might instead look at Paul Gonsalves as a minimalist too, reaping a maximum of effect from the skimpiest of materials. Ready Go, which concludes that toot suite, is one of numerous up-tempo romps Duke wrote for him, in hopes of recreating the excitement of Paul's epic performance at the 1956 Newport Festival. And as ever, Gonsalves' light sound and unstoppable momentum are somehow perfect for each other. The routine was an old one, but Paul makes it sound newly minted, which is not much different from what Duke was doing, reliving old triumphs, but still making his music sound fresh. If he'd fallen from the heights of previous decades by 1959, he still stood head and shoulders above virtually any composer for big band writing then, or now.
Kevin Whitehead is a regular contributor to Downbeat, Cadence, and Jazz Times magazines. He reviewed James Lincoln Collier's new biography of Duke Ellington and a reissue of the album Ellington Jazz Party.